Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, August 21st, 2015. This is Sam Minter again, and Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello.
Hello.
We are back on Skype.
We're back on Skype.
Yep. It was fun doing it in person.
It was a lot of fun doing it in person. We did do a lot of walking that day.
We did some walking, back and forth, and not a lot. I mean, it was some.
Typically, I will say that normally neither you or me probably go out walking to go to dinner.
Well, probably not, but like I make a point.
So it wasn't a lot. I mean, yeah, okay, good point. Just in the context of the situation, but
we walked maybe what, 2 miles?
We walked a round trip like about 2.5-3 miles.
Okay, it's not bad. But it's not bad. It's not crazy walking, though.
No. It's not like that. There was this one day that I got lost. I wound up walking 13 miles, like in Montreal, like years ago. And I wound up with, I was so exhausted. I was like blisters on my feet. And it was a very hot day. And I was like, oh my God, what the hell did I do? No, nothing like that. No.
But it was fun to see everybody. It was fun to do it. We did the show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was a little different from us. But hey, whatever.
I did have feedback from a couple of people. They did.
Oh, you had feedback this week.
Yeah,
okay, good.
No, I did. I did have feedback from a friend of mine from New York who listened to the show, really liked it very much. He really loved the debate coverage as well, the way that we did it. So he was like, just like I said. So, yeah. So he was, I got some positive buzz on that as well.
Oh, well,
but Sam.
Yes.
Somehow. Yes. Managed to almost kill himself on the trip.
Oh, yes, yes. On the way home.
Yes.
I will tell that story, but I will mention one more piece of feedback. We had John on Facebook say that they realized that, I think they meant doesn't, they realized this doesn't happen often, but for next time they want a live studio audience.
Yeah, well, I okay.
Well, Chad was kind of our live studio audience.
Yes, he was. Okay, but I understand what he means by that. Once we get like very popular and we'll have our producer set that up for us.
What I answered him on Facebook was, look, when we hit regularly having over 1,000 listeners a week, maybe that's enough to like schedule some sort of meetup or something.
Right.
Where we can rent out a room in a restaurant and record the show and have people there or something.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll pick neutral ground, like halfway between us. Like what's that?
Like Chicago.
I was thinking halfway would be further, Saint like Louis. Arkansas or something. St. Louis. Yeah.
St. Louis.
Yeah.
Denver, Dallas.
Or we could go halfway the other way and meet somewhere in Asia.
Oh boy. Now you're gonna make try to find the exact half. How do I find the exact midpoint between?
I think there are online tools for that, but we're boring people now. I will tell the story of how I got deathly ill on the way home, but I did want to mention the agenda for the rest of the show.
Yes.
Once again, and at some point, we're going to have other kind of news again, international or tech or economic or something. But once again, the election is dominating things. So we're going to be talking about a whole variety of election issues that have come up in the last week. We've got everything from this guy Larry Lessig running for president. We've got the rumors of Al Gore that came and went. We've got more Clinton email stuff. We've got birthright citizenship. We've got Clinton dropping under an important milestone. We've got all kinds of other things. We've got some Trump stuff as usual. The Bush stuff. Anyway, we're a bunch of election stuff, and we'll take however much time it takes before we're sick of that. And then with what's left, we'll do a lightning round with some other things. So that's the plan. Now, while I was talking about Dad, did you figure out the exact midpoint between us?
The exact midpoint, that we could be is in a town called Rockport, Missouri. Okay?
Well, there you go.
It's And now, actually, there's an application called Meatways, by the way.
To do this right, we have to have the exact coordinates of both our houses, of course. You're probably just doing the city.
But it's going to be roughly in that area, okay, even if we have the exact coordinates.
So, Missouri.
This is about, it looks like about 50, 100 miles north of Kansas City.
Okay.
And it tells you like a couple of places where you could meet. It's an app called Meatways. It's Meet Me in the Middle. If you're going to go meet somebody, okay?
There's a Subway. For those of you who don't know, I'm in Everett, Washington, which is north of Seattle. You're in some town near Miami.
Boca Raton, Florida. There you go. All right. That's what I put. Okay. There's a Casey's General Store where you could meet at. There's a Subway. There's a Godfather's Pizza. There's a McDonald's. There's an A&G restaurant.
Subway? You know, we were saving Jared for the lightning round.
I know. There's an A&G restaurant. There's a John Boy's. A Hickory Road Barbecue and Catering. Trails End, Gus's Family Restaurant. Okay, and a
this
White
is all
Rose.
Very exciting.
Yeah. And that's what's there.
Anyway, Yvonne wanted me to tell the story of my illnesses, which I'm sure is also really interesting. So fast forward like 5 minutes, guys, if you don't want to hear about me getting sick, we'll be talking about the election. So I got into town, for my vacation to meet all of my college buddies and stuff, including Yvonne, Monday afternoon. And then, you know, in the course of Yvonne knows from all the travel, I was sweaty. He made me take a shower at his hotel.
I did make him take a shower.
Before we went and met other friends.
He had been like traveling for over 24 hours. I grabbed him. I said, yeah, you come to my hotel, you can take a shower. Do I need one? Yep.
Anyway, but at the end of the evening, I was once again hot and sweaty and blah, blah, blah. I took a shower and I noticed on my back on my right shoulder blade on the back, I saw like three little spots, red spots. And I'm like, and they felt a little sensitive. And I was like, oh, okay. It's some sort of heat rash thing. It's been really hot. I've been sweating. That's where I was carrying my backpack, you know, whatever. No big deal. I took my shower. I went to bed. Right. Anyway, the next couple days, I noticed it spread a little bit. It was a little bigger, but I was still like, it's hot, it's sweaty, blah, blah, blah. It must be that. It's nothing. It's just a rash, whatever. I thought nothing else of it, even though every day I was getting more and more sensitive. It's sensitive and uncomfortable, let's say. I wouldn't have labeled it quite painful, but it was sensitive and uncomfortable and made it so moving my right arm was uncomfortable. But being me, I'm like, I just completely dismissed it. You know, I think I may have complained to my wife a couple times that I had a rash that was a little bit annoying, but that's it. Then meanwhile, fast forward through the whole rest of the week. Yvonne comes and goes. We finish the stuff with the college stuff. I see my parents. I see a cousin of mine. We all this kind of stuff happens. And then Friday night, like I'm leaving Saturday morning. Overnight Friday night, I'm having trouble sleeping. I'm, feeling a little hot. I feel whatever. But still, I'm like, it's just hot here. I was in a room with no air conditioning, whatever. I wake up in the morning and I realize I've got some of the symptoms associated with a urinary tract infection. I know. Isn't that fun, everybody?
He has problems with that because he suffers from kidney stones.
I've had a history of kidney stones. So I realized I had some of these symptoms. So my parents were dropping me off at the subway to go to the airport. Okay. And so I made them stop at a drugstore first and I got some meds. I got a fever thermometer because I was starting to feel a little bit feverish. I got some pain pills. I got some pain pills specifically for UTIs that help with that, you know, stuff like that. And I got like some water or whatever. So then they drop me off into Metro. I've got my suitcase. I've got my backpack. I'm riding to Metro to National Airport or Reagan Airport. Sorry. And, you know, first of all, I had this nice little adventure where I got on the wrong line and this guy sat next to me and is like, is this the right train for the airport? And I'm like, yeah, of course it is. Oh, wait, no.
Two idiots.
Sorry, wait, that was another day. I'm so confused. But anyway, so I had a nice adventure with a guy and we were on the wrong train and we got on the right train together, whatever, and had a nice conversation. He was from Zimbabwe, but he was living in Texas now. Okay, that was completely a distraction because it was a different day after all. See, I was so feverish at this point, apparently I didn't remember. So on the day that I'm actually talking about, as I'm going from... I'm on the Metro. I get to National Airport. I start heading towards, you know, my gate and stuff. And as I get to the airport, by the time I get to the airport, it has clearly gotten much worse. Okay. I'm now drenched in sweat.
God.
And, you know, I take my temperature. It's like 101 or something like that. And, you know, I get to the airport, I take some drugs, the UTI stuff was getting really painful. So I also took, I have a constant supply of sort of, you know, high intensity painkillers for if I have kidney stones. It was bad enough. And I knew I was going to be traveling all day. I'm like, fuck it. I'm taking some of these. Anyway, I managed to get checked in. I do all this stuff. I am so drenched in sweat.
God.
Okay. I am like this. I'm like, I feel so bad for whoever I'm going to have to sit next to. Right. So I actually, I go back, even though I'm drenched in sweat and like feel like I can't move. I go back from where I checked in and got my seat assignment, which was right before security. So I hadn't gone through security yet. And I walk all the way back. It was, you know, a decent length walk back to the next terminal over where there was a, you know, one of these tourist booths. And I buy, I end up buying a new t-shirt. Cause I'm like, look, I have to have a new shirt. And of course, I'd already checked all my luggage. So like, you know,
okay.
So I bought like a souvenir DC t-shirt. And then,
God, I wish I had a picture of the t-shirt.
And then I went through security and I'm like, I'm going to have to change. I hope I can figure out a way to get cleaned up. Luckily, once I was through security, they had a place that they had like, you know, typical travel supplies. And I bought myself a couple packs of wet wipes. And I went into the damn bathroom. Actually, I did this. Did I do this twice? Yes, I did this twice. I basically cleaned up. I got some wet wipes. I was all feverish, so this is all confused in my head. I actually cleaned up once when I first got to the airport.
Okay.
Because I was already so drenched. And then I checked in. Then I realized that I was all sweaty and gross again. And then I went and got the t-shirt, and then I went and got more wet wipes because for some reason, I don't know what happened to the first ones, or maybe the first time I used paper towels. I don't know. Whatever the fuck.
God.
But I bought like a couple packs of wet wipes. I went back into the bathroom. I cleaned up as best I possibly could with wet wipes in the bathroom. I switched to the new t-shirt, and then I'm at the gate, and they announce that there are no flights leaving anywhere.
That's right. I was wondering when you're going to get to that point.
You know, and
of all the things that could happen.
So I'm here. I'm feverish, running like 101, 102 degree fever. I'm sweating like a fucking pig. Although I don't actually know how badly pigs sweat. I don't know, but it's a
phrase. You haven't, like, hugged a pig? You haven't kissed a pig?
Not recently. No. Anyway, and now they're like, there are no planes leaving or going. And also, this is this is Terminal A in Reagan Airport, the one that hasn't been renovated yet.
Yeah, it's just...
There are no fucking open seats at all.
So on Saturday, there was a big, massive, like, air traffic control outage in the D.C., Baltimore, the air, basically Dulles Airport, National, Reagan National, BWI. It was just a clusterfuck because they tried to do a software update on one of the long distance tracking centers, and it went wrong, and basically all air traffic was basically brought to a standstill. And look,
my flight was at noon, so apparently they did this update at like 10 or 11 o'clock
in the morning. Like, yep.
Okay, that's a good practice right there.
There were a lot of people commenting about that, yes.
Anyway, so they keep us out there. And, you know, on the one hand, Southwest is there announcing that they're not boarding any planes because there's a ground stop and they have no ETA and they'll give us an update in an hour. What? Meanwhile, I'm on, what the hell airline was this, Yvonne? I've already forgotten.
Sun Country
Airline. Which apparently owns 11 planes or something
like yes, that. Yes, something like that. Yes.
9, 10, 11 planes, something like that. They're like, we're going to board anyway.
Wait a minute. So they decided to board you guys anyway.
Yeah, and they were like, we're just going to board slowly.
Oh, well, that's good.
So they boarded like one row at a time. Instead of whole sections of the plane.
Well, that just makes it a lot less painful, obviously.
And so then, of course, they finally get us all on the plane. And, you know, and meanwhile, I have this UTI thing. So I'm feeling like I needed to go to the bathroom like every 5 minutes. Cool. So I finally get on the plane. And then they're like, we still have no idea. We were boarding you hoping that this would be resolved, but it hasn't been resolved yet. We'll update you in a while. And then after half an hour there, of course, we have to let you off now if you want to leave. We recommend you don't leave so that we can leave as quickly as possible when this is resolved, but you can get off if you want to. About half the plane got off, including me, because, you know, I'm like, I'd rather use the bathroom in the terminal. You know, and so then they call about like 10 minutes later and say, okay, we're going. So we get on and we fly and we, whatever. And then, Minneapolis, was my change stop. And, you know, I went and
I got connection,
my connection, whatever. I'm not a traveler. Change stop, you know, stop.
The change stop.
The place I do the thing to get on the other plane.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, so I go and get something to eat, and you know my fever is increasing. Okay, so I had to walk. It couldn't have been more than like a couple thousand feet. Okay, to where I grabbed some food at like a Subway. Actually, it was a Subway.
There you go,
Jared again.
Oh, apparently, yeah.
But, you know, and I went and got my sandwich and walked back to my gate. And like I said, only a couple thousand feet, once again, drenched in sweat. And I'm like, oh, shit, I need another T-shirt.
So now first you're like the ultimate tourist. So now you didn't post pictures of this T-shirt. They're great. See, your DC tourist T-shirt.
And then a Minneapolis
tourist
T-shirt.
Yes.
Or it was a Minnesota or something. I don't know. Whatever. It was whatever the hell they had. You know? Because I was once again in a state where if anybody sat next to me, they'd be like, oh my fucking God, this is disgusting. Do you have Ebola? You know, I did not have Ebola, but by the time I got to Seattle, my fever was over 102. And my wife, was, you know, already thinking that maybe I should go to the to urgent care right then and there. I'm like, no, give me my drugs. I actually had I even had antibiotics from the last time I had a kidney stone. The doctor gave me like a preemptive, like, hey, if you get a UTI, use these. So I'm like, give me my damn antibiotics. Give me some more fever medicine. Take me the fuck home, and I'll go to bed.
Right.
But, you know, in the morning, the fever was no better. And my wife, like, looks at my back, looks at the rash, and she's like, what the fuck is that? And then, of course, she gets on the internet. And a few minutes later, she's like, that's shingles. You've got shingles. You need to go to the doctor. So, yes, in the morning, she got me to go to urgent care. They diagnosed that I had a bladder infection, probably a kidney infection, and yes, indeed, I had shingles. And, oh, by the way, shingles is treatable in a way that will reduce the length of the infection significantly, but it's only good within the first 72 hours, and this had started Monday, and it was by this time Sunday, so out of luck for me. Sucks to be me. I have to go through the whole 4 to 6 weeks that the thing usually lasts. And they gave me an additional antibiotic shot to try to get the other infections out, because they were worried that the kidney infection would get worse to the level that I would need to, like, get, you know, IV fluids and all this other crap. So anyway, that evening, my fever actually got worse. I was up to 103 in a fraction. My wife was thinking about taking me back to the ER, but they, you know, the advice was just drink a shitload of fluids, like 4 8-ounce glasses of water within a single hour. And I switched from one fever reducer to a different fever reducer, from whatever, from ibuprofen to acetaminophen, whatever. And a couple hours later, the fever broke. And bottom line, you know, it's a few days later now.
Dead.
I am not dead. I feel a lot better. I still feel very sore. I still have very limited energy. I get tired easily, that kind of stuff. But, you know, the worst is over. So, it's actually a toss-up for me whether the travel day was worse or whether the day that my fever hit 103.2 was worse. But I think the travel day might edge out a little bit, just because I had to buy 2 fucking shirts. Because I was so horribly sweaty and disgusting, and I had to be on a plane next to some poor person.
Well, you have not shared the pictures of the shirts nor anything else.
I have not shared the picture of the shirts, and my wife took a number of pictures of the rashes as well. I don't know that I will share them. I don't know. If there is much demand, maybe I will consider it, but, you know, or maybe I'll eventually get to it. I used to be on my personal website on abelsmay.com. I used to be on a monthly cadence of every month posting the best pictures of the month. The last time I did that was for January, and I kind of fell out of it. And I've had a couple family members say, where the hell are the pictures? But I haven't gotten back into the pattern yet.
Yeah, but we were expecting, like, your buddies, like, expecting the pictures, like the other pictures that you took, but we want those.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and I mentioned to you in person, but I don't think I've mentioned on the show, the camera on my iPhone no longer works.
Yes, so you had the big camera.
I had the big camera, but what that means is what you're missing is a whole bunch of selfies of me in the airport looking like I'm about to die.
Yes, which that would have been great.
Yes, that would have been wonderful.
Yes.
Anyway. Oh my God, we've spent 23 minutes on this shit.
Well, we didn't have a lot of, let's be clear about this. We kept, like, other than the elections, we didn't have much else to talk about. You know, that's not so bad.
All of the new listeners who came because we did wonderful debate coverage, who weren't already scared away by our show with Chad last week, now get 20 minutes of me talking about being sick and having rashes and being a hot, sweaty pig.
Sweaty.
I'm sure.
That's scaring all the other travelers.
All of these people are going to be, oh man, I love this show. I'm definitely going to keep listening.
Well, anyway, we'll dig into the election right after this break.
Okay, we are back.
All right.
No more talk about sickness.
No.
So, election. So the first thing I wanted to mention, is this guy, Larry Lessig.
Larry Lessig.
Is saying that he might run as a Democrat. Now, are you familiar with Larry Lessig?
No.
Okay, so Larry Lessig is a professor. I forget where, and of course I'll look him up here. But you know, the bottom line, what he's known for is being an activist on, you know, copyright law, trademark law, basically looking for those things to be a lot more open than they are now. He teaches at Harvard. And so he's known, he's been involved, I believe, with the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And generally, he's been an advocate, against things like SOPA, against basically anything that expands intellectual property rights, and has been looking for things to, bring that sort of stuff back under control and to be more oriented towards individuals and fair use versus just being, an infinite.
Nobody gives a fuck who's going to vote for this guy.
Infinite money pump for companies and stuff. Anyway, he's very famous in that particular area. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the specific thing he's promised if he runs for president. He's doing some sort of like fundraising thing. If he gets enough money, he'll run for president kind of thing. But he has promised that he has a specific set of bills that he wants to pass, and he will become president, and he will work to get those bills passed, and then as soon as those bills are passed, he will resign and turn it over to his vice president.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Where can I sign up to vote for him?
Of course, he hasn't said who that vice president would be.
Right.
But he...
Could it be me?
Can I get him on the phone? Can I talk to him about this? I think he has said it would be sort of a, leftish, progressive-ish type person, like an Elizabeth Warren type. But he hasn't been specific. It's this thing called the Citizen Equality Act that he is pushing, which apparently is something regarding campaign finance reform and against gerrymandering and expanding voting access. And those are like the three main things that it tries to do. Of course, the text of this bill isn't worked out fully yet either. It just was like, okay, really? I mean, I actually... I've followed this guy for a while, not in detail, but I kind of like, his general attitude towards a lot of these particular issues that he's known for. But this is just nuts. I mean, this is just yes. a publicity stunt thing, obviously. It's
yes.
He has no intention of actually being a serious candidate for president, let alone no. winning. But it's like, come on, you promised to, like, campaign for one bill and then resign Quit. The presidency as soon yep. as it's done?
Right.
I'm sorry. That's not what presidents do.
Not particularly, no. Really. Yeah. Not very
presidential. And what does that mean? If he fails to get the bill passed, he stays president the whole 4 years?
Yep. Basically.
I guess so. And you know, he probably would fail to get it passed. Of course, this is all academic, since there's no way in hell he'll ever get anywhere near the White House.
Correct.
At least as president. He right. he may visit someday, take the tour or something.
We got close to the White House the other day. We actually got a little scared we might have gotten shot.
Yvonne took a wrong turn and started heading towards something that had a whole bunch of restricted do not enter signs on it.
Yes. Somewhere very close to the White House, yes.
Good job, Yvonne.
Thank you.
Anyway, I had Larry Lessig was my topic number one. Moving on, topic number two was there was a brief Al Gore spike where there was an article and people saying that, you know, people close to Al Gore were starting to sort of feel out whether or not this might be a good time for Al Gore to jump in. And I was getting excited because, you know, hey, let Biden jump in, let Gore jump in,
yes.
let everybody,
yes.
everybody, you know, but apparently within 24 hours, Gore himself was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that.
You know, I gotta be honest with you. I would love it if Gore was running instead of Hillary. Can I be honest? I like him a lot more.
I think I would prefer Gore to Hillary as well.
I mean, I really like Gore a lot more than Hillary.
Right. Just,
you know, I mean, somebody yesterday asked me, like, who am I voting for? And I'm like, oh, God, I'm going through the candidates and I'm like, you know,
you told them Larry Lessig.
My response is, at the end, is like, honestly, I don't feel really excited about any of them. Now, I will say this.
Trump.
I mean, yeah. Trump. God. Freaking, you know.
Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, it would wind up being to the choice of the least worst candidate at that point. And I'm like, you know, look, if it comes down to, say, Hillary versus Bush, which is what we believe will be the final, like, you know, really, like, game. I mean, it's just, you know, it winds up being Hillary, but I'm not excited about Hillary. It's just the reality. I'm just not Hillary doesn't get me excited. Not one bit.
And polls are showing a lot of people think that. And actually, that's a natural transition to one of my other topics. I've got some more specific Hillary Clinton stuff about the email and stuff. But one thing that I noted happened earlier this week. I have mentioned time and time and time again on this show that, you know, the marker you have to look at is, does Hillary Clinton fall below 50%? Because if she does, then other candidates are going to start seeing, maybe I should jump in.
Yeah, I should jump in, right?
The Real Clear Politics average for Hillary Clinton this week dropped below 50% for the first time. It's at 49.3%. Hmm. Now, that is still, obviously, a huge lead over anybody else. Sanders is next at 25, then Biden at 12, and then O'Malley, Webb, and Chafee. O'Malley 1.7, Webb 1.3, Chafee a big fat 0.0. Okay?
Nice.
Yeah, I know. You have to work to do that. But, you know, she is still very strong. She is still in the strongest position of any non-incumbent running for a nomination in modern history. However, under 50%, with a downward trend, with the email thing continuing to go drip, 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 just waiting for anything to come out that's actually, like, people can grab onto, and we'll talk about that some more.
But I will say, look, in part is, look, at this point, there has been so much coverage of other people.
Yep.
That I think it's natural for that number to be dropping right now.
It is natural for it to be dropping. The 50% magic point, though, means that there are now more people saying they don't want Clinton than there are saying they do. Now, of course,
that's it's not that they don't want Clinton. It's like they're undecided,
or they're protesting, and
right?
Yeah, they're saying Biden or Sanders, but right. Hey, they'll all come around.
But I know that if the fucking if it all comes down that I got to vote for Hillary or some other moron, I am winding up, even clenching my teeth. I'm going, shit.
Yeah, so but look, the bottom line is under that 50% mark, you can imagine that there are people out there like Biden is making his decision right now. He said he'd make a decision by the end of August. So there could be an announcement at any time from the Biden.
I got to be honest, if Biden jumps in, I'm voting for Biden.
Well, and that's what everybody says. Biden's hovering at 12%, but he's not even running.
I'm lukewarm as it is about Hillary. I mean, I have zero reason to vote Hillary if Biden jumps in. None.
So here's the thing. All of these other candidates that might be saying, oh, Hillary looks really weak, maybe I should jump in. And there's probably a half a dozen of those guys out there. I mean, you look at all the Democratic governors and all the Democratic senators, every single one of them has to at least have the thought cross their mind that, hey, there might be an opportunity here. But they have to do this calculus as well. Right now, if you look in general election polls, Clinton is still handily, winning against all of the Republicans in the race. Now, it's not necessarily as big a margin as they would like, but she's still handily winning against all of them. Meanwhile, if you do look at polls of Biden or Sanders or any of these other guys, they don't look quite as strong. And if you all of a sudden have competition here, the Democratic Party starts looking weaker. Right now, it's the vision of the Republicans are a chaotic mess. But the Democrats know what they're doing. They got Hillary. The Democrats have it together. The Republicans are out of control. That's the overall impression at this stage of the game. Now, this stage is still very early, of course. But if the Democrats get into an all-out war, there are a couple different possibilities there. One is that, Hillary really is damaged and she continues to fall and one of these other guys manages to win. And then it's a question of is that person actually stronger in the general election, than Hillary would have been? Hard to tell. The other possibility, though, which is perhaps more likely given how much has already lined up behind Clinton in terms of money, in terms of establishment support, in terms of everything else, is that all you end up succeeding in is extending the process and damaging Hillary through the inter-democratic struggle. Because, there would be harsh words said at debates, and there would be this and there would be that. And of course, if you're a Biden and you're at 20% to Clinton's 45% and you're going to try to make up that gap, you're going to be attacking Hillary on things and you're going to be weakening her. And, does that actually, do you end up weakening the Democratic position overall without actually winning? You end up still getting Hillary in the end, but you get a damaged Hillary. A Hillary that's damaged by her own team, as opposed to, we know the Republicans are going to be hammering her the whole time. But now you've taken potentially a candidate that everybody, as you've said, is sort of okay, Hillary. And now you've damaged her further among Democrats as well. That's the risk that anybody takes if they decide to jump in at this stage.
I've heard that story about that further damage and whatever or whatnot. The reality is that I've never bought into that. I just you know, it seems like almost every year where the winds are of the election are heading, you kind of have an idea of what the kind of candidate that is going to be carrying the election. And, you know, I don't buy that. I actually have seen more probably that it may be that having a good fight for the domination may be a good one is a boost to the visibility of the person.
And of course, that's the 2008 argument, is that Obama was actually greatly strengthened by having to go through the battle with Clinton first.
Yeah, because if you think about one of the problems that really Hillary is having right now, honestly, I think it's the fact that there is no battle. And all the focus by all the press and everybody, it's hilarious. I mean, it's on Trump. And look, and this is the funniest thing is that the people that are focusing on Trump are normally the people that are not focusing on the Republicans. Fox, you know, there's been a whole bunch of stories this week or reading where Fox is actively not wanting to cover Trump. they don't want to give – I mean, and CNN and MSNBC, they're all over him.
Yeah, and let's save most of the stuff about the Republicans for the next segment. But yeah, I think it's just – all I'm saying is it's part of the calculus. If anybody thinking right now about jumping in on the Democratic side, they're thinking – okay, is Clinton really weak, or is this just, you know, is this just temporary? If I get in, do I really have a shot, or am I just making it harder for Hillary? And if I, you know, if I jump in right now, what are the odds of, you know, the end result actually be me making it worse for the Democrats? And they may decide, I mean, like, you know, people who consider this obviously have pretty good egos. They may honestly think, you know, hey, look, you know, Hillary is in trouble. It's only going to get worse. If we let this pass on, you know, probably, you know, what's going to happen is sometime in the next 6 months, Clinton is going to collapse entirely. And then what the hell do we do? Or she's going to wait till the general election and collapse even worse. And so I have to come in and rescue it. I have to come in and rescue the Democratic Party from Hillary Clinton. So is that what a Biden or somebody is going to say?
No, I do think that if a guy like Biden runs, he's running on the conviction that he thinks he's the best choice. That's it. I really do. He's going to say, listen, I think that, you know, I've thought about it. I've seen where we're at. And I think that I think the best chance to continue the leadership that we've had in this country, period. And there's a lot of people that I think, you know, would probably like that.
So I guess here's the question at this point. Well, first, do we think Biden's going to jump in? Is Biden going to do this? I've been consistently saying, no, I don't think he is.
But
the weaker Clinton gets on these kinds of numbers, I mean, with her now under 50%, the stronger the chance seems to be that, like, okay, maybe he will.
I know. I mean, if I had to put money on it, I would put no.
I think I would still put no, because I think at this point, Clinton is still strong enough that I honestly think the most likely result of a Biden or somebody jumping in at this point is to just stretch this out, and we'll still get Hillary Clinton in the end.
Well, I think the other thing is that I am still not convinced that Biden wants to put himself through this right now. I don't think he is prepared. I mean, if he was going to do this,
he should have been preparing for months.
Yes, he would have been doing it earlier. And I know that people are enticing him, and he's thought about it, and there's reasons and motivations. You know, some people have been saying that, you know, the death of his son, to a certain extent, you know, some people are saying that maybe it was a little bit more galvanizing in the way of, like, running as to leave a certain mark or change or something like that. It's one of the articles I read. Some people said the opposite. If I got to put money on it, I would put money on no.
I'm gonna agree with you. I'm gonna say no. I'd say the six Democrats we have are the six Democrats we're gonna get: Clinton, Sanders, Biden, O'Malley, Webb, Chafee. I just listed Biden. Duh.
And Trump.
And Trump, the Democrat too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sorry, no, it's not a Democrat.
But yeah, okay, but you know, the five we have: Clinton, Sanders, O'Malley, Webb, Chafee. But I don't give. It's not zero odds for Biden. You know, if I had to put odds on it right now, maybe there's a 1 in 3 chance he runs.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I want to move on to the Republicans after a break, but there is one more thing to talk about on Hillary Clinton before we move on. And that is that there have been more developments on the email servers. One is that she did hand over the server to the FBI. I guess that may have happened last week, but the FBI has said they do think they can recover some things from the server. Clinton, when asked about how it was wiped, said, I believe the quote was something like, I don't know how they do this. Maybe with a cloth. Which obviously was intended as a joke, I hope. But the bottom line is, it looks like, you know, they had, you know, at first this was actually in the Clinton house. Then they moved it to a small service provider, which turns out to be a mom and pop business that were running. I mean, their server rack was apparently in the bathroom.
Nice.
And it's like, really, guys? You've got to be fucking kidding me. And then they wipe it. And apparently, from what the FBI has been saying so far, they wiped it actually by just deleting the emails, not by actually wiping it.
So they did. So they're all there.
So they may all be there. I mean, there's still the time issue. We're looking for emails from a long time ago. Apparently, it was the same physical server the whole time. I mean, I'd kept mentioning maybe it was. I mean, you would expect there to be hardware upgrades periodically. Apparently not. And then, of course, here's the other thing. There might be backups.
Oh.
It's like, okay, first of all, of course there should be backups, but if you're actually like trying to wipe shit, you gotta wipe the backups too.
It's like not a very technically
and you know, look,
inclined operation over here.
You know, and Hillary was, you know, playing dumb with the wipe it with a cloth comment or whatever. But the more I think about this, the more I'm thinking, you know, look, you know, a certain minute, and I realize they hire people to do this shit, but they hired a mom and pop operation running things out of their freaking bathroom. You know, their whole companies that do this. And do this very well.
And it's not like the Clintons are poor.
It's not like they're poor. But I'm beginning to think more and more and more that a certain minimum level of technical knowledge, you know, for me, is starting to become a prerequisite. Like, I'm not asking you to actually be a scientist, although that would be wonderful. I'm not asking you to actually be a computer geek, although that would probably be cool too. But, you know, you should have some conception of how these things work. Some very vague, high-level notion, at least. And at least have the competence to find... If you don't know the details, at the bare minimum, have the competence to find advisors who do. Because, you know, there's so many issues. And I'm not even talking about managing your own damn email. There are so many issues today that rely on, you know, I mean, we've got all these damn issues with hackers hacking the Pentagon and stuff. This is a major policy issue. It's potentially going to be a major part of relationships between the U.S. and China and Russia. We've got all kinds of issues where the technical stuff is important. where the understanding of what's going on with technology is important, with what's going on with science is important.
Can I disappoint you on one thing? Look, all the people who are negotiating on that front are also equally technically inept. Yeah, what do you want me to tell you?
You know,
you should see some of the meetings that I'm in. For God's sakes, people.
Well, one of the things I read about the Iran negotiations is that there actually was on our side, you know, okay, you got Kerry at the top, but there was a very strong team of people who had very in-depth knowledge of the. Yeah, nuclear issues involved about.
Right. Yeah, right. We had a good bunch of policy wonks to help us do this right.
Bunch of wonks, but like, you need to at least be able to. You know, okay, Hillary needs to be able to pick a wonk who understands the goddamn technology.
Well, can I be honest? Look, I think I don't know if you have the same perspective, but I think that Kerry has done a better job as. Secretary of State so far than Hillary did.
I at a very high level, I think that's true. I would have to have one of the things that makes it hard to judge that is how much of it is because of him versus her and how much of it is timing. Like certain things came to fruition.
I think it has been, at a high level, what I perceive, it seems to me that it really has been him. Now, I'm not going to say that Hillary was a disaster at state. She was not, okay, by any stretch. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that I think Kerry's better.
Right.
That's my feeling so far. So I don't know. Look, I'm... the entire way, method of how a person manages their affairs, runs a business, is a whole bunch of set of moving parts. You've got, you know, also, like, for example, I'm judging Kerry and I'm judging Hillary, and they were both not in the same situations that they both came in.
Right.
Okay? Different times, different things to confront, different moving parts around. I'm not comparing apples to apples. So I understand what you're saying, and I do agree. It shows a lack of judgment in a whole bunch of different places from a technical aspect. I don't know if that carries overall to everything, because they made such a mistake. Given that every other damn Secretary of State apparently did probably...
I hear you, and I realize we haven't held anybody to these standards in the future.
No.
In the past. I think this is something that, as the years go by, the importance of science and technology to policy decisions is increasing dramatically. And more we need people who don't look at those issues and throw up their hands and say, I don't understand this crap.
I don't get it. Yeah, I know. I hear you.
Anyway, the bottom line on Clinton email is she's been incredibly stupid. She's been incredibly stupid from the beginning. You know, we mentioned on last week's show, Chad was an example of something I didn't think would exist. And I realized when listening to the show later, we didn't make it completely clear. He's actually, the last couple elections, he voted for Obama. He's been a Democratic voter.
Yes.
But he feels like Clinton has excluded herself from consideration because of this. And not because of the technological stupidity that I've mentioned, but specifically because it looks like there were some issues with handling of classified documents.
But you know what? What he said about that also shows the level of lukewarmness you've got about Hillary. It goes back to, like, you know, look, he's obviously been a person that's voted for Obama twice. So therefore, he is definitely a Democrat. He does believe
he may have some other parties in his past as well, but at least I talked to him about the last two elections and I know they were Obama.
So, I mean, so he's definitely, but my point is, but he finds it difficult to support Hillary. And when you've got somebody that voted for Obama twice and has that many reservations about voting for Hillary, I mean, it gives you a lot of pause about our candidacy.
Right.
I mean, it gave me a lot, I got to tell you.
Yep. Anyway, that's enough about the Democrats. We've gone on for 30 minutes. Let's take a break. Just under 30. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll do Republicans. And who knows? We may skip the lightning round thing today.
Yeah, we may skip the lightning round at this rate. Yes. Yeah,
sorry, guys. You know, I know how you guys love the lightning
round. I know, but we'll promise we'll go big next week on the lightning round.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what's in the news. Anyway, we'll be back after this with the Republicans.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we are back. Time for Republicans. So, I don't know, a couple things, you know, one thing to, mention in passing that, was actually a couple weeks old, but, we mentioned last week that Rand Paul was having some problem with, you know, his staff getting a little grumpy about him not doing as well as people were expected. I don't know if we'd actually mentioned on the show yet. There was also an issue, with a longtime, Paul family staffer getting in trouble legally with some, I think it was potentially bribery related issues.
No,
so that happened. You know, who knows? You know, it could be an isolated thing. So I don't want to read any more into it than that. But it was out there. The other thing that we mentioned briefly, and I actually can't remember if we, you know, here's the problem with meeting in person, Yvonne. I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or like over dinner. But Bush gave a big foreign policy speech last week.
We did not talk about it on the show.
Okay, so we must have just mentioned it, you know, in person over dinner or something. But he gave a big foreign policy speech, and the thing is, he seemed to lean in more. You know, he talked about Iraq again, and it's like, you know, I heard a number of people say, and my son is squeaking behind me, is something about a pig in space or something. Anyway,
yes.
Okay, Alex, you need to be quiet if you're going to stay in here. You're distracting me. I'm losing my train of thought. You wouldn't like me to lose trains. Anyway. Be quiet or I'll make mommy come get you. Okay, he leaves. He brings up Iraq again. And you'd think that at this point, his advisors would sort of have beat into him, don't mention Iraq.
Yeah.
Don't mention Iraq. If somebody asks you about it, here's a set of nice answers.
Here's what you could say. Hey, look at the bird. Look at that. There you go. Something like that.
But no, he does a whole speech where he talks about Iraq a lot. And amongst other things, he says that, you know, okay, there were issues, but overall, it was worth it to get rid of Saddam. So he says that first. And I know on this show, you and I have had many conversations where we've said actually the opposite, that, you know, hey, it's actually, if you ask most people on the ground, it was better there under Saddam.
That's right.
But, you know, you also,
ISIS. And
he also mentions that he basically thinks ISIS and everything else that we're talking about the state on the ground today, that's not because his brother went into Iraq. That's because Obama pulled the troops out once he was president.
Okay. You know what? This goes back to this fucking thing explaining this week about the fact that, I'm sorry, it was GW that negotiated the fucking withdrawal.
Yes,
it was. I mean, Obama was only fucking like setting the exact date.
Well, and even there, he was basically following the timetable that was laid out by W.
Right.
And if anything, Obama actually went through an extensive effort, which failed, to try to extend
them there longer.
Yes.
And they were demanding this whole damn thing about the freaking troops being subjected to Iraqi law.
Right. And so,
which we were like, fuck that.
Yeah. I mean, basically, the Iraqis made it very clear that they wanted us to leave. And if anybody was staying, they would be subject to Iraqi law. And we said, okay, well, then we're out. After fighting that and trying to negotiate various things to stay longer, which makes you ask, okay, well, what would Jeb have done exactly? Would Jeb have told the Iraqis, well, screw you, we're staying anyway, and we'll fight you for it? I mean, obviously, if we'd said we're not leaving, the Iraqis couldn't have done shit about it, but it probably would have gotten, you know, more difficult for us again. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we would have lost more American troops when we're not only pissed off the people but pissed off the government, too.
People were very pissed off about that in the U.S. If people have short memories about that, but people are getting really angry about that situation.
So, I mean, yeah, like, nobody that I could see asked him that follow-up question. Well, how exactly would you have kept the troops in, given the opposition of the Iraqi government? Would you have, you know, actually directly violated what the Iraqi government was asking and used force to maintain us there against their will? And what would the ramifications of that been? I don't think anybody actually asked him that, or at least if they did, I didn't see it. But it's like, okay, really? Yeah, you're blaming Obama for following the timetable defined by your brother.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, so it's like, so the only interpretation I've seen that sort of makes sense to me is that Jeb has realized that the Iraq thing is not going to go away.
And he can't avoid it, so he's got to give his best explanation.
He's got to go all in. He's got to go all in.
Yeah.
And own the Iraq thing, I should say. So anyway, okay, moving on. Then we've got this whole birthright citizenship thing this week. Uh-huh. So for those of you who don't know, birthright citizenship is basically the idea that if you're born in this country, you are a citizen. No ifs, ands, or buts, period. That's it. You know,
which is something that, honestly, from my perspective, has always been a good thing, because there are a lot of countries that don't have that. And what that has created is this huge problem class of people that sometimes are almost, in some cases, are countryless.
Right. If you look at a map, and there have been a couple maps going around this, and I'm sure you can Google and find them. Basically, most of the countries of North and South America have birthright citizenship, and basically no one else does. There are a handful of other countries and other continents that do, but basically that's it. The Americas have this concept. The rest of the world does not. However, like you said, this causes all kinds of problems in the rest of the world.
Right.
Where you have these permanent migrant populations that last for generations and generations but aren't citizens.
Right.
And you've got this fundamental divide in society that builds up because of that. And so you've got could probably tick off a list of a half a dozen countries where this causes problems on a regular basis.
Yes.
Sticking to the American situation for a little bit, A, you know, this has Civil War ramifications too, because this was enshrined into law by the 14th Amendment to the Constitution as a response to the end of the Civil War.
Yes.
And basically the way of guaranteeing that all the slaves were in fact citizens, do all the rights of citizens.
Correct. That was a big reason for it. Was now, one of the biggest reasons.
Now,
yes.
one of the arguments I've heard from a few Republicans this week is that it was only meant to address racial issues, and apparently, you know, if you look at the history, apparently not. There were other things at play as well. But even ignore the history. I'm not a historian. I don't know the detailed history of the 14th Amendment. I'm not a lawyer either that would have studied that. But this is like, it's just such a fundamental concept. It seemingly from an American point of view, you're born here, you're a citizen, period, end of story. And anything that is counter to that seems to be, well, who exactly are you trying to exclude? Okay. You're trying to exclude immigrants who come here, who aren't yet citizens, who have a baby while they're here, right? I mean, that's basically what we're trying to exclude.
Yes.
So why do you care about that baby? It's because you're afraid of the damn foreigners.
Right.
And it just, at a very fundamental level, seems xenophobic and racist to me. It's like...
It is. It completely is. There's no other reason for it.
I mean, I know you and I are of a similar mind here. We should be making it easier to become an American citizen, not harder.
Well, they seem to want, you know, like I said, if this is, like I've said before, I mean, all of this shit is like mana for the Democrats. I mean, right now, honestly, Hillary is the front runner. I think I could have a fucking like stick of shit. Okay, as the Democratic candidate, and right now they probably win against any of these morons.
You know, I think this is absolutely true. I mean, look, you know, because the rhetoric surrounding this, and you know, this started. This is again Trump driving the agenda. Trump put out this big immigration policy document because people were saying, you know, Trump, you know, has no real issues. He's just, you know, he's just a talker, blah, blah, blah. So he puts out this policy document, and it's basically the most anti-immigrant document that could possibly come out of the Republican Party.
Yes.
It talks about getting rid of birthright citizenship. It basically says we should immediately deport any undocumented.
Everybody. Apparently,
no question.
The estimate I heard it would cost like about his deportation program would cost about $700 billion. I mean, the biggest mass deportation in the history of the world.
Now, meanwhile, there are a couple things to point out. You mentioned during the debate, I think we talked about immigration numbers. And there are a couple of things to point out. First of all, for all immigration, so including legal immigration, the biggest numbers are now from Asia, no longer from Latin America at all.
Right.
For illegal immigration, the biggest numbers are now, I believe you said it was Costa Rica or somewhere, not Mexico.
It was not Costa Rica. I can't remember. It was some of the country in Central America.
Some Central American country. Overall, if you look at the population of illegal immigrants, the population in the country of undocumented immigrants, it's going down. The net flow has been out. So this, you know, let's grant, even if you grant that, you know, illegal immigration from Mexico has been a problem in the past, it peaked years ago.
Yes.
And has been getting better and better and better and better. This is not a critical issue facing the country right now from any point of view other than
you're a racist.
We're afraid of the damn Mexicans taking over.
Basically, yes.
And okay, then. And so, of course, you know, the people who are legal immigrants from Latin America, and maybe you have more insight to this than me, but I don't think are taken too kindly to this.
I would say that the vast majority of people that I've spoken to that are migrants, they all absolutely loathe. And I've heard this from a number of people who consider themselves Republicans.
Yeah.
Absolutely loathe this whole thing.
And one of the things that has been pointed out, two things. One on the birthright citizenship. Somebody pointed out that Marco Rubio would not be a citizen if it weren't for birthright citizenship, because his parents were not yet naturalized citizens at the time he was born. even though he was born in the United States. but the other thing that people who've been looking demographically at things is, if you assume relatively minor changes in other demographics, which of course, you know, there may be more significant changes in other demographics, in order to win, the Republicans have to, yeah, if you look at what Mitt Romney got in terms of percentage of the Hispanic vote, the Republicans have to double that to win. You're not going to double what you got in 2012
this. Not even remotely close.
Now, Of course, the argument is, well, you could make that up by getting an even bigger percentage of, like, white males or something. But, you know...
So it goes back to the party, you know, because somebody was like, you know, the party of old angry white men, basically.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know... Yeah, and so what are you doing here? You're driving this whole population more towards the Democrats, whereas, you know, if you look at natural, like, surveys of their views on issues other than immigration,
there's a lot of issues that they are aligned with Republicans, but the problem is that they are just so blind and stupid to this whole thing, and they just don't really, I mean, they are so xenophobic about this that they don't care. They just, you know, are just, you know, killing themselves over this stupid thing.
Yeah. And at the same time, so you're either driving them away or the ones who really do, like, prefer the Republicans on other may stay home.
Right.
You know, which also has the same effect, essentially, you know,
yep.
You're just giving this to the Democrats. And, you know, I saw, what was the tweet? I'm going to have to look this up. Yeah, here we go. This was a tweet by Ralston Reports that I retweeted, on August 20th, Hillary, Donald, can you drive up Hispanic turnout? Trump, done. And then Hillary, blacks too? Trump, watch this. And basically, the watch this was Trump made some comments today, or within the last 24 hours as we're recording this, about Ferguson and about the protesters being influenced by gangs or something else stupid. I forget the details, but basically Trump started, you know, making an ass of himself on black white issues too.
Great.
It's like, really? You know, you keep, he says the gang members in Baltimore, Chicago, and Ferguson are essentially also undocumented immigrants.
Oh, boy, I know the blacks are going to love this.
You don't even know. Look, anyway, it's like, okay, there's a certain group of people who are attracted to all of this stuff that Trump is saying, but you drive away all of these other important groups. Having said that, you know, people say, you know, Trump would be absolutely crushed if he got the nomination in a general election. You know, the polls still show Hillary winning, but it's not actually by, like, amazing margins much more than the rest
of them. But you know what?
So far.
Remember, okay, but do you remember how the polling was at the last election and what the real margin was? I mean, seriously, look, I do think that I honestly think that the true margin would be quite a lot more than what those polls are showing. Well, I think a lot of people are just, you know, like right now, he's getting a lot of publicity and blah, 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 and whatever. But in a real battle, the margin would be double digits.
Well, part of this is also, you know, would Trump actually drive up all kinds of turnout? So, you know, all the immigrants, you know, absolutely decide they must vote, you know, et cetera. And you know. Yeah, so there are all kinds of effects there. But anyway, this whole birthright citizenship thing, it just seems to me to be another one of these things where you're just... Oh, and I mentioned Trump started this, but a whole bunch of other Republicans have been asked their opinion on this because Trump started talking about it, and so have also come out in favor of this. And I don't have a list in front of me. Some of them have come out in favor of this. Some of them have said this is nonsense. Of course we keep birthright citizenship. So it is a split. But it's become something they're talking about, which again is not like... I don't think it's an overall winning issue, even though there's clearly a... large segment of the Republican Party who loves this stuff. But moving on slightly to the next topic, and
I was gonna go on more Trump stuff. So oh, yeah. But he keeps taking on so blacks, whites, and then for some reason last week he took on Heidi Klum. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand this. Why the hell? Who, by the way, blasted him back on the internet? Pretty damn good. I don't know if you saw. I retweeted where she posted.
I saw a bunch of people tweet it, but I did not actually look at it.
I mean, it was hilarious. So he goes and he calls that Heidi Klum is no longer a 10. I don't know if you're familiar with Heidi Klum, but she's honestly very hot. Okay.
Okay.
Supermodel. I mean, just smoking hot. And yes, she's older now. She's in her 40s and she's had 3 kids. But I'm sorry. You know what? She's still super hot. So, you know what? She did this video where she had a t-shirt on and she's wearing like a bikini bottom. And she's got this number 10 hanging on from the shirt. Okay. In the video. And some guy shows up with a Trump like face and rips off the 10 and it reads below 9.99. And she goes and shrugs. She's like, ah, well, oh well, I'm only a 999. It just, you know, they put hashtag, you know, Klum Trump's Trump. Okay. It's just, you know, I'm like, why? I mean, the man is just an insult machine. I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy. I mean, is it just that he just wants to just lash out at everybody? Is it just, okay, last week I was, you know, posing the whole thing about, is he just a mole? I mean, is he just, or is this guy just,
you know, the longer this goes on, the more tempting that is to think. You know, it's like, really? How he is, every single time he opens his mouth, Democrats are going, hallelujah!
Yes! You know? Keep it going. Yes.
You know, but, you know, there are a couple interesting things going right now. The rest of the Republican candidates, you've sort of seen a shift. Like before the first debate, everybody was very, very dismissive of him. They would barely pay attention to him. Now a whole bunch of them are sucking up to him. Right. And talking about how, you know, well, he's got a good point on that, or he's doing this or whatever, or I respect Mr. Trump for what this, you know, and it's like, really, you guys are responding to the fact that he's in the lead in the polls by validating him further?
Yeah,
that's going to work for you. Now, some of them are hoping to sort of, you know, get some of the buzz and say sort of like, you know, well, Trump wants to get rid of birthright citizenship. Oh, I do too. I do too. I do too. So don't support him. Support me. You know, anybody who's, it's like, I can't imagine like this is going to work.
It's just such a clusterfuck, like right now with these guys.
And so, but the other thing that is scaring me And I'll be honest, like, you know, several shows now I've said, you know, it's all fun and games until we elect President Trump. The most recent set of polls, you know, we talked about it in the Republican Party before, you know, I was making fun of, okay, he's got 25%, but like something like 70% of Republicans polled say they would never, ever consider voting him no matter what. That number's been dropping. That number's been dropping significantly. And there have been polls now that try to dive into the details and look at Trump support in different groups of Republicans. Like, how is he doing in moderate Republicans? How is he doing in moderate in Republicans that say they're conservative? How is he doing among religious conservatives? Blah, blah, blah. And he's doing great in all of those sub-segments. And like I said, the number of people who are saying that they would never consider him is dropping and dropping and dropping. And that is both in the Republicans and amongst the general population. And it's so like, okay.
Okay. But look.
I still think, yeah, there's no way in fucking hell. Although I want to talk about a scenario in a minute that would be a lot of fun, but yeah. Go ahead, but it's just the fact that he is still like that. Those kind of internal metrics are strengthening. You know, makes you have some pause of like, you know, he's actually growing in some of these numbers. People are taking him more seriously as this goes on.
Well, I still think like
he has, you know, dropped. He has dropped from his peak numbers, though. By the way,
yes, he has.
If you do look, if you do look at the Real Clear Politics again, just because it's easy to go to, his peak was 24.3% of the Republicans nationally, and it's now down to 22. Okay, he's still way in the lead, but
Registered Republican voters make up what percentage of the population?
Oh, something like 30 or something.
30%, right. So 22% of 30 comes up with how much of the voters, registered voters?
Right. Well, I'm talking at this point. Forget the general election. I'm talking about, like, you know, what are his odds in the Republican side?
I still fucking
think. Here's what I say here.
Like, he's got the entire Republican establishment against him. You know,
he's
gonna do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's by far the most likely outcome. Here's a scenario though, and I just want to play that out because this would be so much fun. Okay, but let's try to game out what Trump winning the Republican nomination would actually look like. Okay, so my take overall right now has been that what's going to happen is Trump may not drop precipitously from where he is now. However, a bunch of the other people are going to start dropping out. And then their support is going to go not to Trump, but to some of the other more mainstream candidates. And then you're going to get Trump slowly drop out of the lead. I mean, Trump also may say something incredibly insane and drop precipitously. Although so far, every time he says something insane, it seems to improve his position.
Right.
But something could happen, or people could start believing all the, oh, he's really a Democrat kind of stuff, that a lot of his opponents are pushing. Like, look at all the things he said 5 years ago, 6 years ago, hell, even 6 months ago, that sound more like Democrats than Republicans.
That's right.
But anyway, but let's take that realistic scenario out for a second. And let's say we don't get people dropping out, because a number of people have pointed out with the super PAC structure, there's a lot of ways to get independent funding and sort of keep going. Like we mentioned last week that Rick Perry was no longer able to pay his campaign staff.
Right.
But guess what? A Rick Perry super PAC has started to pay his campaign staff.
Ah.
So even though Rick Perry couldn't pay them, they're still getting paid by somebody.
Okay.
And so it's with all of the campaign finance laws as they are, it's easier to just have enough money to sort of keep going. And if nobody drops out, it makes it easier for Trump to stay on top.
So basically, you're basically brokered. You finally get your wish.
Let's talk about it.
We got to buy some cigars. Like, where's the Republican convention for this year?
Oh God, I don't know.
Wherever, but we got to go over there with some damn cigars. And then we go to the smoke-filled room because that's where they this happens, right? And then, you know, we come out with a deal.
So look, you know, if you get a situation where we get into the first few states, and we don't even have to go the brokered convention route, the way that the states are stacked means that if you come out of the first few states with a significant lead, that it's hard to break that, especially once you start getting into some of the winner-take-all states, and which is a little further down the calendar. But, you know, if you end up coming out of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and Trump has the plurality of the delegates at that point, let alone if he has a majority at that point, it becomes really hard for the other people to catch up. And so let's say we do play out. And somehow, I'm not predicting this. I don't think this is likely. But let's say Trump actually wins the Republican nomination. Now, all of these candidates stood on the stage, and Trump was the only one to say that he would guarantee he wouldn't run as a third party if he wasn't the nominee.
He wouldn't guarantee.
He wouldn't guarantee, right. But how many of these other guys do you think would really, really be comfortable with Trump as the nominee?
Like almost none of them.
Right. And so could we possibly have the long predicted Republican schism?
If it went to the point that Trump got the nomination, I would say yes.
Because the interesting scenario to me here, I mean, it'll be great if Trump runs as a third party, but it would be an even more interesting scenario if Trump wins the nomination and then one of the other Republicans runs as a third party.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility, but like I said,
it's a very low possibility scenario. It's the crazy scenario. It's the fun scenario to think about. I'm not predicting it. I don't think that's going to happen. I still think you're slowly but surely going to have a grind away. Trump is going to fade. One of these other guys is going to jump up. The odds on favorite is still Bush. But one of the other things that there was an article about this, again, sort of switching topics for a second, is that the funding is actually starting to dry up for Bush. You know, we've said follow the money, follow the money, follow the money. A lot of Republican donors are starting to say, you know, Bush ain't looking too hot. Maybe we should start looking somewhere else.
But that money is not going to go to Trump.
That money is not going to go to Trump. But who do they annoy?
That's the question.
You know, Rubio is a serious possibility. Like right now in the my election stuff again, electiongraphs.com, go check it out. Right now, of the major candidates with lots of polling around them, Rubio does best against Clinton of all of them. Now
I believe that
may change. That may change over time, but as of right now, that's what things look like. People have also talked about Walker a lot. But Walker has been dropping significantly and has been, you know, he's been trying to push his conservative side more and more and more, but it seems to have been backfiring so far. Who else are you going to, where would this money go? Carson? No, I don't think so.
No.
Cruz? Probably not. You know, your buddy Fiorina? Rand Paul, no, the establishment doesn't like him either. Kasich is being talked about a lot lately. He's been trending upward. Maybe he's another that's been positioning himself as the as more moderate side. Walker's been dropping. Walker's trends have been going in the wrong direction. So I don't know. I think Kasich. I don't know. Maybe. But it would be interesting to see if the money really stops flowing to Bush. Watch very carefully to see where it flows instead. And then, of course, our favorite, again, talking the crazy scenarios, Mitt. Maybe they come back to Mitt again.
There you go. That would be one thing. All right. Well,
I think that's all I got for Republicans.
I think that's all we got for today. Okay, yeah. At this point, unfortunately,
I think we're right around the 90-minute mark again. So I think we should cut it off here, and we'll save lightning rounds for next time. We may do something.
We would turn it on its head. We would start with a lightning round next time around.
Maybe. We'll see what's in the news next time. But we got Sesame Street going to HBO. We got the Apple Car. We have Ashley Madison again.
The Greek government fell apart. They're gonna have to have an election.
Greece fell apart again. Yeah, we got Apple rumors too. We got Jared. I kept mentioning Jared at the beginning. He got in trouble, of course.
Jared. Yep.
You know. So you got all kinds of stuff. But I think we did. I was gonna say we did an all politics show, but we really didn't because we spent the first third of the show talking about me being sick.
Yeah, almost dying.
But no. You know. Almost dying. Yeah. And it didn't quite go that far, but no. You know, it kind of felt like it for a little bit.
But apparently you did sweat a lot.
I did sweat a lot, and I'm sweating again right now, so I don't know.
All right. Well, okay. Well, that's a wrap for
today. Yeah, I don't want to... You know, for a second I was coughing and stuff, and I was like, God damn it, if I get a cold or flu on top of all this stuff... then it's just time to give up. It's just time to fucking give up. You know, if I have a bladder infection, a kidney infection, shingles. Oh, and by the way, here's the flu.
God,
that would just be
not cool.
Yeah,
that would really suck.
Anyway, we're done. Thank you again for joining us for yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. And if you made it through, we once again thank you. You know how to contact us. Tell your friends. Look for us on Facebook. We're at Curmudgeon's Corner. And all that. In the meantime, have a great week, people. And tune in next week. We'll do it again. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.